Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to Designers for Learning. Believe it or not, we are on our 10th webcast in this series. Today is August 28th, and today I'm very happy to have as our guest Maureen Berry. She is a librarian at Wright State University, and she's going to tell us today about her interests and passion in service learning and some of the projects she's working with. And as a reminder, my name is Jennifer Madrill. I'm the one that hosts and facilitates this. I guess every couple weeks we get around to setting something up. So with that, Maureen, why don't you give us a brief introduction to yourself and maybe just launch into some of the background you have in service learning. Where does your passion come from, and why are you interested in this topic in general?
Great. I'm Maureen Berry. As Jennifer mentioned, I'm a librarian at Wright State University. That's in Dayton, Ohio. Most people don't know where it is. I began my journey with service learning in 2008 when I got the idea. I teach my own for credit information literacy class, so I teach my students the whole research process, how to find, select, evaluate, and synthesize sources. And so I teach a for credit class that's an elective, so it's not a required class, and I only teach it once a year. But I got the idea to incorporate service learning in 2008 after I was talking with some faculty members who teach service learning courses. And I guess it's just sort of part of my, the fabric of me because, you know, even as an undergraduate, I majored in sports marketing. And even then people would ask me, you know, what do you want to do when you graduate? And I would say, I want to use sport to do good for my community. So I think it's sort of just ingrained in my being for some reason. So that's kind of what attracted me to it and how I started with service learning.
And you know, it's funny, as I speak with different people about service learning, it seems to be like that. Everyone gets to a point in their lives when they're like, okay, I can give back a lot now, more than just showing up and volunteering somewhere. I have skills that I can bring to the table, and then as you're an instructor, I can bring my students along with me for the ride. So with that, and if you could help me define for folks that aren't as familiar with the definition of service learning, and where I'm finding as I talk to people, everyone has a little bit different definition based on where they're coming from, maybe in a K-12 setting or higher ed or whatever it might be. But can you just, in your own words, describe service learning and provide a definition?
Sure. For our institution, service learning is a teaching and learning pedagogy, so that closely incorporates service with the curriculum of a course. So it's tied to the learning objectives for the course. So it's not just, it's also important at this point to define what it's not.
Yes.
And so some it's not just, you know, going to clean up the park on a Saturday once during the course. It is like closely tying whatever service you're doing to something that the student should be learning in the class.
That's exactly right, and I'm not great yet at defining. You did a great job, and I'm going to listen to this several times. And because as I describe it to people, they'll say, "Oh, we had a volunteer requirement in our program where you had to volunteer
right.
10 hours," and it's like, "Okay, that's great, that's really great." But it's this whole concept that we're really trying to drill down to the skills that the students are and knowledge that they're building within the class, and then trying to map that to something that they can do.
Right.
With the community. And so with that, let's drill down. Can you give us some examples of some of the prior projects you've worked on, just to give us a sense of how you do incorporate this with your objectives for the course?
Sure. I approached a community partner because my idea was that I would have my students do research for a nonprofit. It occurred to me that they're often very understaffed and overworked, and they often need information that they, number one, don't have time to get, and number two, don't have access to the resources that we have access to as an academic library. All of the databases and ebooks and all kinds of collections that we have, and they don't have access to it necessarily. I mean, they could come into our building since we're a state institution and do that, but again, time is a big factor. So my students, I sort of walk them through the process of, you know, identifying their information need, which in this case is something that the nonprofit needs information about, and they help us define it actually. So we all sort of work on that together. So that's the first step in the process of information literacy is identifying your need and knowing what your need is and then what kinds of sources will meet that need. So we walk through that process of what do we need, how do we find it, here it is, we found it, now how do we put it together for the partner, how do we synthesize it all for them. And so we all sort of work on this together, the partner and me and my co-instructor and our students. So that's sort of the process we use. And so then the students sort of compile a research portfolio for the partner. So that's sort of the product that comes out of it. And they give that to the partner so that the partner has all the information there. And then they can refer to it as they need it. And then we have, of course, a big part of service learning is reflection, which sort of ties the two together. So then we have reflection with the community partner on the last day, in addition to reflection throughout the course, in terms of writing or just reflecting as a group in class. But then the last day they come and accept the research binder and reflect with us about the process and how the information is going to help them so that the students understand how it applies to what they did for the agency. And so it's the whole process is their service, really, even though they don't, and they don't have, unfortunately, they don't have a significant amount of time with the partner. But they're serving throughout, whether or not they're actually interacting with the partner.
It's the end product, it sounds like, right? The binder that they're going to get. So with what you said, I have probably 35 questions, so let me try to parse them and bring them into a set of questions for you. I guess it begins for me with how do you go out and find your community partner, and as part of that, how do you describe to your community partner how this relationship is going to work? Again, distinguishing it from I'm going to give you a bunch of volunteers, but rather that there will be parameters around what we can do and start to define that they're, you're giving them something that they need. How does that whole process evolve for you?
Well, when I first started, of course, when I had no experience with service learning, I approached our Office of Service Learning on campus for their assistance in how to go about communicating with a partner, or even just to see if they already had someone in mind. They may have already known of someone that they work with on a regular basis that had some sort of need. It turns out that was not the case, but in fact, it was sort of serendipitous. My co-instructor found an article, I think it was related to United Way, and they put an article in the paper saying that this particular agency needed help with research.
Okay.
And so it just sort of fell into our lap the first time. So we worked with Children's Hunger Alliance, and they're the ones who had posted that notice in the paper that they needed help. Which is very strange and odd to me, but that's how it happened. But I do have some experience approaching a new community partner as well for a different project. I approached Project Read, which is a literacy nonprofit in our community, just because I thought it had a really nice tie with libraries, of course. So, so I just sort of sought out a partner that had a similar mission to me. And just explain to them, this is what I have in mind. My students would be doing, research for you. And so we would help, you would help us identify what needs you have. We don't want to give you information that's not going to be useful to you. So we would include them in that conversation and say, what needs do you have? And sometimes they have trouble articulating that need even. So, at that point you might ask them questions like, what big projects do you have on the horizon in the next year? Is there information that you might need related to that? Or, what are your priorities right now? And that might give us some ideas or clues as to what information might help them with those particular goals. But other times they do have very clear needs that they know they need and they just don't have time to accomplish the research for it. It's always a conversation, and I just meet them informally for lunch and just say, what's going on? What do you need help with? This is what my needs are in terms of what my students need to learn, how does that fit in with what you might need? Mm-hmm. So you do have to balance, you know, what your students get out of it, what the partner gets out of it. It should be a mutually beneficial experience. So that's kind of how I've gone about it.
You know, and I think this is a piece of the puzzle that people just don't automatically assume will be an issue. And to me, it's kind of that starting, as you said, you take them informally out to lunch and let's have a conversation. Mm-hmm. And what I found when in my class that I taught last semester, when I had 15 students going out and they found their own nonprofits to work with, mm-hmm. Is defining your skill set and what you have to offer. And I think in and of itself, that's a pretty valuable exercise. The students, in that case, I passed it off to the student, but as you're saying, if you're the coordinator as the instructor doing it, you kind of need to do that as well and say, we think a lot about the content that we teach our students every day,
yeah.
But at the end of the day, what are their abilities? What are they able to do that would be of value to somebody else? And make it in a term, and not in our jargon. A lot of times, especially in our area, instructional design, we have our own jargon, performance improvement and human performance technology, all those words a nonprofit contact will have no clue what you're talking about.
Right.
And so I think just for me personally, what you're describing and how you do it, it has to be at a pretty personal one-to-one relationship, whether mm-hmm. that be the student doing it or you doing it, and you kind of have to prepare for that and I don't want to say dumb down your message, but make your message something that someone outside your discipline will have a clue what you're what
right.
you're saying.
Yeah.
And then we have a question in the chat room from Jill. She's asking about how you, I guess, formalize the relationship. Do you have a memorandum of understanding that you have with the clients you work with? Is there anything that you lay out with them in the beginning to say, once you've had this conversation, to say, okay, this is what we're committing to do for you? Or how does that happen?
For me, it's been very informal. I've never written up, you know, a document or mm-hmm. contract, so to speak. I suppose that's not a bad idea, though, just so that everyone's aware of what everyone is expecting out of the experience. So that's probably a good idea to explore in the future.
And I'll just add my two cents to answer Jill's question, what we did in the class that I taught last semester. That was actually a requirement of the students because that was a skill set that they were working on is, again, being able to document what it is they would be working on and make sure that what they were committing to could be completed within the scope of the semester. And it was, again, meeting a need of the client. And I would say in terms of challenges we had, a couple of interesting things. We initially called it a contract, which wigged a lot of people out.
Yeah.
The students didn't want to sign a contract. The nonprofits and the people they were working with didn't want to sign a contract. So we quickly switched the terminology to memorandum of understanding. But I think it's, as you're saying, most of the times it's probably a fairly informal relationship. But I think it also raises the bar for both parties when you say, okay, this is what we're both agreeing to. And particularly for the projects my students worked on, they needed a certain amount of access to the nonprofit. They were interviewing people very often. They were reviewing important documents. Also, there were some confidentiality issues that would creep up. And so it would address how we would be sharing information that we got from the nonprofit. And so I think it was pretty helpful, and we followed the format in just kind of a traditional consulting text outside of our discipline that gave us some guidance in terms of what the key terms would be within the memorandum of understanding. And we didn't make it something, I don't think at the end we had anybody sign the document. That was kind of my initial, because again, I wanted to raise the bar so everybody was fully committed to the process. But I think by the end we maybe waived the requirement that it had to be signed. But I hope that answers Jill's question. All right, and then I've got some questions over on the Titan Pad, and I think we've hit a big chunk of the first few ones. If you could then just talk a little bit now, switching gears, one of the reasons that I found you is you now are working on a colloquium for other librarians, right? Interested in service learning? Is that? Can you just again describe what that's all about?
Sure. One of my colleagues out in California, Jennifer Newtfall, who's also very interested. She's a librarian, but she's also very interested in service learning. And I should mention, maybe this is obvious, but maybe not, that a lot of librarians don't even know what service learning is, have never partnered with service learning classes. So it's not something that a lot of people are talking about. So Jennifer and I have sort of become a two-woman crusade to sort of push this issue. There are other people talking about it. I don't mean to take credit for it, but there are some people talking about it, but I feel like it's under communicated, I guess. So she and I found each other and have co-presented before and that kind of thing. And so she contacted me earlier this year and asked if I would be interested in helping serve on this planning committee to create a one-day colloquium about how libraries and information literacy can be tied into service learning. So the audience will, majority of the people that will come, I think, will be librarians, but we're not limiting to librarians only. Other people that might be interested might be administrators or faculty or service learning professionals, student affairs folks. So all are welcome who want to join in the conversation about how libraries or information can play a role in service learning. So it's sort of part of our mission to get more people interested in it and talking about it nationwide.
And so obviously it's just kicking off. I think you just announced you were starting the planning process and the and getting things together. But in general, in the back of your mind, do you have certain themes that you are interested in having? I'm assuming will there be some type of proposal process where people submit that they want to be speakers, of a traditional, okay. And so in general, what themes do you have for the conference and things you'd like people to tackle in their discussions?
Yeah, we're very open to any proposals. Some things that we have thought about that might be worth proposing would be a case study of a service learning experience or some sort of assessment of the student learning within service learning. It could be, just theoretical in nature about how information plays a role in service learning. So, we've thought of all kinds of possibilities and we're open to all of them. And the call for proposals will be going out later this fall. So we'll be distributing that through lots of different listservs and all of that. So.
And as a librarian, I'll start grilling you with some resource questions. And as you kind of are thinking about your the themes for the conference, as you start seeing things, I was in the same boat. I'd never heard of service learning up until about 9 months ago. And so as I started digging into it, I did realize there is a bit of a world out there of people that are doing this and some research being done. And one of the most interesting areas to me personally, given my background in distance learning and online learning, is this concept of e-service learning. So students who are enrolled in online courses using service learning as the means of getting experiential learning opportunities and applied learning opportunities. From your experience, any resources you may have in that area, have you run across anyone who is doing this type of thing with an online course?
I have seen a few examples. Unfortunately, I have not committed them to memory. but it is something that I think is becoming more widely popular and is not something I have familiarized myself with very well, but I have seen, I remember seeing a webinar hosted by some state campus compact organization, which is the national organization that sort of helps institutions of higher learning, higher education with community engagement and civic engagement and service learning kind of things. So they're the national organization. There are state organizations called of Campus Compact. And I remember that they hosted some state campus compact, I don't remember which one, hosted a webinar about it. So I know I've seen things, but I have not committed them to memory, so I can't share them at the moment. But
and that's actually great. That's one of the resources I have also stumbled on is Campus Compact. Mm-hmm. And it's basically a consortium. I think it's 1,600 universities across the U.S. And they really love to share. It's kind of kindred spirits that are out there. And
yeah.
Their website is awesome. I'll put a link in our Titan pad here when I'm done, just so anyone who might want to follow that organization and find the local, I'm sure as you're saying, there's a local state chapter if you're in the U.S. of where you can get help. But they have case studies, as you're mentioning. They have books. They have publications that were done by the government in some of the service learning areas. Are there other resources?
Coffee shop will close from now until 1 o'clock.
Your coffee shop is closing. are there other resources, though, that that may be helpful that we could share with other people in terms of if they're interested in getting into service learning?
I apologize.
That's okay. You're at a school. These things happen. It validates that you're at the school. You are there.
It sure does. Anyone want to take a library tour?
Exactly.
I'm sorry, I missed your question now.
Oh, no. I was just saying, Campus Compact is an excellent resource, and they in and of themselves have pages and pages of resources to provide others. Are there other places you can point people that may be interested in getting into service learning for how they could get more information if you're, an instructor, they're ready to embark on this in one of your classes?
Yes. Well, and aside from if you know you have your institution has an office of service learning, they're obviously a great organization.
They want everyone to know that this coffee bar is closing.
Apparently.
It's very important that we know this.
Apparently. So aside from partnering with your own office of service learning, some other resources. Campus Compact is obviously a very big one. There's also a Service Learning Clearinghouse, National Service Learning Clearinghouse. If you Google them, you'll find a ton of resources on their website, lesson plans, activities, articles, all kinds of things. And if I may make a shameless plug.
Please do. That's what I invited you to do. Please, go ahead.
I blogged myself. About service learning in particular and how it relates to libraries. So I have a blog called Service Learning Librarian. So if you Google that, you'll find it. And I have bibliographies listed, of course, as a librarian. I would do that. So there's lots of different articles and resources there related just to general service learning, but also to how libraries incorporate with service learning and different articles about different experiences librarians have had all over the country. Partnering.
Yeah, have your attention, please. The guide and library, too, are highlighting our many services and collections.
You are in the library. You're right.
All are welcome. Please gather in the library.
Apparently they were not happy with the volume level.
The tour will begin in 10 minutes.
Wow. Okay. So if you Google my blog, Service Learning Librarian, you'll get lots of different resources listed there as well. And that is not my official job title, although I think that misleads people to think it is. But
and is that under the is it under the library's URL, the libraries.wright.edu/service learning? Is that the one? Okay,
that's
perfect.
Exactly right.
I just put that in the chat room. And then also I just wanted to, before I forget, you're active on Twitter as well. That's, I think, how I found you. And so originally, what's your Twitter handle for those that are interested?
SL Librarian. So
perfect.
SL stands for Service Learning.
Service Learning, SL Librarian, excellent. Yeah. Oh, that's perfect. Now, is there anything, I'm looking at our questions that we had for you, is there anything in particular that we've missed or any exciting projects underway that you'd want to share? Again, shameless self-promotion is absolutely acceptable at this point.
All right. Well, in that case, I guess I'd just like to share that I've been involved in a couple other experiences, aside from my own class, I've partnered with a couple different service learning English composition courses, and I'm also a co-instructor for an interdisciplinary course called The Ethics of Sustainability in Appalachia, And so it's co-taught by myself and a social work professor and an environmental science professor.
Wow, how cool is this? Okay.
I should mention that the two professors started this class 4 years ago. I joined in 2 years ago. So they started the class, and then I sort of weaseled my way in because I just thought it was awesome and fascinating and loved it. So it's an honors interdisciplinary course, and they talk about social and environmental sustainability in the Appalachian region. And people may not think of Ohio being part of the Appalachian region, but we do have a little corner in the southeast part of the state that's Appalachian. So we actually cover the course content all over the throughout the semester, and then at the end of the semester, we go to Athens County in Ohio, and we serve with several community partners there at the end of the course. So I'm sort of the embedded librarian in the course, but I also teach part of the course about literacy issues and like digital divide issues as well. So the first year I was just the librarian for the course, and then last year my instruction role became a little more content oriented. Curriculum-oriented rather than just the library research portion of it. So I'm very lucky that my administration allows me to leave for a week and go on this trip. It is by far the most meaningful experience I've ever had as an instructor, getting to know the students and actually living with them for a week. And the community partners that we work with there are just the best partners you could ever ask for. And we work with them year after year, so we feel like we're really building a really great relationship with them. So it's a pretty exciting class. I'm really proud of being part of it, and I'm glad they let me weasel my way in.
Oh, no, this sounds amazing, and I think this is so inspirational. I mean, clearly you're very excited about what you do, and as you're saying, it's one of the most important things you do in your career, and I think that's the part that I think is interesting from both a faculty standpoint as well as the student standpoint, because you're extending what you do in the classroom to reach out and find ways to help others. And I wanted to first of all ask those in the chat room if you have any questions. We'll be winding down in the next 10 minutes, so please post your questions in the chat room. But I just wanted to also just highlight for you, or ask you to highlight, how do you think a teacher could go about expanding this, reaching out to other teachers? You said they already had this started, and then they brought you in. But I mean, that's just the coolest thing. Is if you could, even I would assume then this would extend just beyond the scope of a single semester, right? You could include. Is that something that you do as well, where you have maybe one class working on something, and then they build on another class builds on it? Is that also a component of it, how would you go about doing that? I guess my long-winded question is, how would you go about partnering with others to do this?
Really, I think it comes down to personal relationships. So, you know, I happen to know one of the professors pretty well on a social level, so it just sort of came up one day that her students were struggling with the research paper. She was really unhappy with their papers and the research part of it, and so I was telling her about this whole embedded librarian concept, and she said, well, do you want the job? It's yours if you want it. So it just, I mean, it just sort of happened. So, you know, a lot of times these things just come down to who you know and who you have relationships with. And so, you know, I don't know if I have any grand plan for how you might approach a faculty member. I mean, obviously, you know, if you have personal relationships with them already and you know that they teach service learning classes, you might suggest how your services might apply to their course and just sort of make a sales pitch that way and just say, hey, you know, I could help you with X, whatever part of your class.
Right.
Just like anything else with faculty. So, yeah, so it just, I think a lot of times it just comes out of who you know and who you have relationships with.
And I think also it goes back to what I said originally, it's taking stock in what your skill set is and what you and your students can offer, and then keep your eyes open, as it sounds like you do, for what other people are doing and saying, hey, I can insert my class in what you're doing, or I can bring some value here. And then I wanted to leave on a super happy note, and I think I'm giving you a super softball question here, but if you could describe for me what you think your students get out of it based on what you hear in the reflections or what they go on to do afterwards or what their experiences are like in the class. So if you could kind of give us a motivational, this is what your students will gain from this experience as a way to kind of wind down the conversation, that would be awesome.
Yeah. Well, I think I get the most feedback from my students on the day when we have our end of the semester reflection with the partner. They also have to provide a written reflection. And, you know, with reflection, it's important to sort of guide guide them to answer questions that get them to think about what they actually learned, not just say, what did you like about the experience? And then, you know, they'll just say, oh, it was great fun, and I really liked the people I met. And, you know, if you want them to be really deep and, like, connect what they're learning with what service they did, you really do have to guide them with the questions. So that's an important thing to note when you're embarking on service learning. So in the final reflection days, we often hear students say, this class should be required.
Okay.
And to me, that is like instant gratification, because it's not often that you would hear.
No. I wish I was forced to take this class.
Yeah. You know, I think they sort of drag along in the beginning, kicking and screaming. But then when they see what impact their work actually had, aside from just their professor looking at it, and they see that it actually has an impact on the real world, so to speak, they're much more engaged and invested in it, and they understand better what they actually accomplished, I think. And just that real-world connection is important to them and gratifying to them. And so I think that's the biggest compliment they could pay me is by saying, you know, everyone should be required to take this class. To me, that's coming from a student. That's pretty big. But they also just get a basic understanding of you know, what issues exist in our community and how they can help solve them in just some small way, and it might make them more willing to do so in the future, to seek out opportunities like that in the future. And, you know, some students are more inclined to do that and others aren't. So I know some of my students who have continued on with service learning classes or volunteer opportunities, but I think they're probably more inclined to do that in the first place anyway. But it's very gratifying to have everyone here for the conversation, including the partner, and to just get them to understand a little bit about what the issues are in the community. And also, I borrow this term from someone, and I can't remember who, but to get them to confront their own privilege.
Yes. I talked to a nonprofit about that yesterday and saying, actually, that's as she's worked with many groups in service learning capacity as the client, as the, you know, the community partner, and she said, being very frank, that, you know, a lot of times there's a disconnect between the students coming in and the clients that they serve, and that's actually part of the learning process for the students as well. So
yeah.
And I lied. I do have one question, and I don't mean this to sound like a downer question to ask you, but we have focused on all the sunshine and rosiness of it.
Yeah.
But this is putting a huge. Let's just be frank. This puts a huge burden on you as the faculty member. It would be much better and much easier for you to stand up with a bunch of PowerPoints and say, right. "Here's how you learn how to be a librarian." But can you help us understand what really is involved, and let's be upfront and say with the magical comes a lot of messiness and a lot of work, but as we're saying, it's worth it. So can you help us frame that for folks that are just going into it? You know, explain. Let's be truthful about what's involved.
Yeah, it does obviously require a lot more work, because you do have to have constant communication with your partner and, you know, helping them understand what their role is and what your students' role is and all of that, and coordinating, you know, making sure that your students get out of it what they need and what the community partner needs as well. So obviously it adds a lot of layers of communication and time in that regard to set things up. And, you know, I do have my students go and actually volunteer with the organization once, so that at least they have some contact there. They help with a book sorting.
Oh, wow, okay.
There's this big warehouse in Ohio and they donate books to all these literacy agencies. So the students go to the warehouse and help sort out books that could be donated for certain reading levels and stuff like that. So they actually do have that contact with what the agency actually does on a daily basis, at least once during the semester. So there's that messiness. Getting the students there, and did they actually show up? And you know, dealing with issues like that could be stressful as well. It takes a lot more coordination. It's a lot adds another layer of complexity and messiness, like you said. It's not all sunshine. But, you know, one of the things I learned from my service trip to Athens, the agency that we work with there, they operate under this philosophy they call the ethic of inefficiency.
Excellent. Oh, I love this. Keep going.
Yeah. So the whole idea is that, you know, when they volunteer, they don't just go and do the work and leave. They build a relationship with the people they're working with. And that is the most important thing. Whether the job gets done or not, it's important to build that relationship with the people you're working with, to make the clients, so to speak, feel like they're part of the process, feel it gives them a sense of dignity and humanity, and that these people aren't just here to help me and leave. Like, they actually care about my situation and what I'm going through. And so they focus more on relationship than service.
Okay. Wow, that is so cool. So the ethic of inefficiency. And so just basically acknowledging that this is not this is not just a simple, clear path from beginning to end, that there are going to be bumps. And the bumps are what make the experience, it sounds like, right?
Right. And a lot of people ask me, you know, how do you have time to do all of this? Like, why do they let you go on this service trip for a week? Like, is that the best use of your time? You could be impacting lots of other students as opposed to the 12 students in your class. But to me, it goes back to that same ethic of inefficiency. It's the most meaningful experience I've ever had as an instructor. And so I would never have that if I didn't take the time to do it. So yes, I could be impacting a whole lot more students if I stayed behind, but on a superficial level.
Right.
So for me, it's a good trade-off and it's worth it.
Wow. Well, I can't thank you enough. You're a kindred spirit. This is awesome to connect with you. And,
yeah, thank you for having me.
And I thank you for not only what you do for your students, but also taking that extra effort and time to blog about it. And, you know, you use Twitter and then taking this huge step of setting up this colloquium, which I think will really reach out to so many people. But thank you so much for joining us. And I hope you'll stay connected with us as we move forward and keep us posted. And it's probably the best place to follow up for the call for proposals on your blog and then also in Twitter. Is that probably the best place?
Okay. Yeah, there will be announcements there for sure. Yep.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you joining us, and good luck with your rest of the day at the library.
Thank you. Hopefully there's no more PA announcements.
Yeah, it sounds like you need to grab your donut or something before the coffee cart or something goes away. So, well, thank you again.
Okay, thanks, Jennifer.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.